Oh, no, thank you. Here's fine. We can walk the rest of the way. It's really no trouble. Oh, you didn't forget your bag. Thanks again for the ride and for the map. We really do appreciate it. Drive safely. Now, it should be right down here. Down this path. The banners are a little faded, but this has to be the place. You know, it's funny. The whole time she was driving us, I was trying to think of who she reminded me of. And now that she's gone, it's finally dawned on me. Oh, and she has a most fascinating story of derring do and adventure and exploration. It's a story of finding yourself in the most unlikely of places. When he'd ask if you wanted to see a film, you'd thought he meant a picture show. And though it had come to the point that you dreaded the newsreels of the terrible conditions in London and the big steely boats carrying your brothers and schoolmates and even the newspaper boys away, an evening of escape had seemed worth it. And honestly, you didn't mind his company, even if his constant talk of schematics and motors and worrying things did make your eyes glaze over. He just couldn't help himself. But tonight he looked dapper, pressed and shined, hair neat as a pin. And you appreciated that he'd tried. His face was handsome, but it always looked as if it were apologizing for itself. And you wondered if he was as embarrassed as you were. His boots weren't on foreign soil. The chairs in the auditorium gave dusty little groans, and the smell of stale books, tomes to most, but love letters to the right audience, permeated. Honestly, who goes back to school when they don't have to be there, you think to yourself, adjusting your sweater. I think you'll like it, he says, offering you a sheepish smile in his hand. She's been everywhere, the most traveled girl in the world. She drove the Khyber Pass, in a Ford, in a Model T. His sudden enthusiasm makes you wonder why you've never learned to drive. She steps behind the podium. She must be nearly 6 feet tall. She's wizened, but radiant, embracing all the trappings of femininity, save the skirt. Instead, Mrs. Aloha Wonderwell Baker wears trousers. As she nods her head demurely, a projectionist in the back of the auditorium brings her stories to life one reel at a time. In grainy black and white, you are transported to the most exotic locations you can imagine, and you meet a girl who is just 16 in the earliest films, and you watch her grow up before your very eyes. She seems at ease in these strange places, at home among snake charmers, poised gracefully atop an elephant, smiling at solemn natives, in complete command of an automobile in the densest jungle or the most arid desert. And then there she is in color, as the house lights come back up, and she's ready to answer any questions, all the questions. She knows she's conjured with her story. What do you want to be when you grow up? A young girl in front asks enthusiastically. Well, I only had two kinds of books when I was growing up. My father's adventure novels and the romance stories that I hid under my mattress at boarding school. And I suppose that I wanted to be the hero or the heroine of either kind of story. And on the day I grew up, I suppose I was both. On the day of her 18th birthday, having arrived in Siberia, Aloha Wonderwell found herself on the parade grounds of the Red Army, a place important in keeping order after the recent revolution. A hard-fought struggle, still vivid in memory, a place where potential threats were snuffed out, executed. Unsure of what to expect, She made her way to the officers as she'd been ordered to do. Guards took their places at her sides and behind her back. In her boots and her breeches, she stood before the commandant. He raised his hand and saluted. He presented her with a set of sleeve pips as the soldiers had their bayonets at attention. She had been appointed a colonel in the Soviet Army. He began a practice speech about the equality of women, and he praised Aloha as a shining illustration. As she regaled Cap, her guardian, with a story of her honorary promotion, he told her that there was more celebrating to come. Entering the home of a local bourgeois family that was hosting a feast in her honor, Aloha was greeted by several girls of her own age and their parents. She marveled at the home's interior, a well-kept secret full of luxury and excess that no one would suspect from the home's dilapidated, ramshackle exterior. As the girls chatted feverishly in a foreign language, they all shared the experience of French boarding school. They explored a large wooden chest full of other secret luxuries. Wedding veils from generations upon generations of brides were inside, each embroidered with precious metals, ornamented with heavy silver chains at the base. Under the veils, under all the other finery, lay an evening gown. Our great-grandmother was as tall as you. We're too small to wear it. Aloha glided into the dining room for the 15-course meal that was to be delivered by peasants in gray stocking feet. In the great-grandmother's gown, regal china blue velvet, bodice clinging to her before the skirt flared, extending to the floor in a long train. There, the woman in the blue dress stared at the officers of the Red Army, looking every bit as ravishing as a Romanov.
How did you get involved with the expedition?
Well, I guess it started with a window. I was the only girl at school who liked to sleep with a window open. Just to be as close to the rest of the world as possible, I suppose. So the nuns put me in my own room, and I had a lot of free time to read. And one day, I was reading a newspaper from Nice, and I saw an advertisement headlined, "Brains, Beauty, and Breeches." It said there was a man named Captain Walter Wonderwell who intended to drive around the globe and that he was looking for a secretary. World tour offered for lucky young woman. I applied, and I guess the rest is history. 16-year-old Idris approached the man at the ticket booth and lied. She needed to get inside. It was a matter of utmost importance. Captain Walter Wonderwell was in there, and so was her future. She lied easily and coolly, and then sneaked into the theater and waited for her chance to catch the attention of the Polish-American explorer. And she did. He invited her to join him, and he rechristened her Aloha Wonderwell, transforming her more fully than he could realize. Her official title would be secretary, but only for a short time. Soon, she proved to be the star, the driving force of the Wonderwell expedition. She felt herself saying, "I don't remember how it happened, how I fell in love with him. It just seemed that it was always true." Maybe it was. He showed me the world. He gave me my children, Niall, Valerie. All the best adventures. It was the best job I ever took.
So, what was your job after you stopped being the secretary? Just smile and look pretty for the camera?
That hardly covers it. She put the car in low gear. The bridge was out, but she knew she could make it. She pressed the accelerator. Oh, she knew she could make the jump. And for one glorious moment, she was airborne. And she thought of the pilots, the ones who'd been going around the world in the opposite direction, the Freedom Flyers. She'd met them in Calcutta, both parties halfway through their journeys, posing for the newsreel, She shook the hand of the dashing, tall, slim Captain Smith.
You guys have seen something in the world down there. We haven't seen anything up here.
The shock of the front wheels hitting the opposite side of the bridge, one tire bursting, brought her back to Earth. And she was glad for it. She'd have to fix that later. But now, she had to explain her reckless decision to Cap.
If you did it, I suppose I can, Cap said.
And he did. And he'd join her in many more reckless decisions. The time they were captured and held prisoner by Chinese bandits, hitting the water buffalo in India and reporting its death, but not the manner of its dying, to authorities, swimming with the crocodiles in the African rivers. But yes, she did look pretty for the cameras.
How did you endure being away from your family for so long?
Well, when we drove from Cape Town to Cairo, my sister, Meg, joined the expedition. And of course, by then, Cap and I had become closer. We also had a regular party of traveling companions. And we did little things like playing jazz on our guitar and ukulele in an attempt to make the strange places a bit more familiar. But of all the nights that they'd played American music, nights in the little club that they'd set up outside a diamond mine, nights on the open savannah, this was the one that she would remember most, the night that jazz failed. She and Meg had pulled out their instruments and played for an audience of native women whose husbands had been traded for the hope of finding more precious things in the mines. The matriarchal clan was not stirred until Owen, one of the men in their party, took the guitar from Aloha and began playing a Cuban rhythm. Then the women sprang to life, exuberant and vibrant, smiles glowing in the flames of the campfire. Their enthusiasm spread among the rest of the camp. Even Cap was pulled into the dance until they all felt at home here in this wild place, at peace with their nomadic lifestyle. All roads lead here. All roads lead home.
What was it like being a woman among all those savages?
My dear, there are women among all those savages. And we're more alike than different. I found a bit of myself in all of them. They're all mothers and sisters and wives. They're all beautiful.
Here, a woman is either a man's mother or the mother of his sons, she was told by the guide that would bring them through the Khyber Pass.
He went on to tell her that the Western ideas of romance were absent, that rifles, to most men, were worth more. She remembered the words as she tried to get close to the smoke coming from the mouth of a cave, and the woman who had made the fire. Cap struggled to straighten the camera, believing the picture was well worth the trouble, expecting the peace and the warmth might exist between them, between these women who rightly should have been worlds apart.
Salam!
Aloha shouted to the old veiled woman, who emerged with a large stick raised above her head, ready to strike. Oh, the only word she could think of, salam! The only word the woman might understand, salam! The woman dropped her weapon and offered a meek half-smile before taking Aloha inside the cave to meet the man she'd been protecting. There were so many women, so alike and so different. Marisha, the white Russian, who'd come to Egypt to join a harem, or Mahafi, in her thatched hut, with jasmine in her hair and a brightly hued sarong, who'd cared for Aloha's infected leg as her husband dove and fished from his canoe in the surf, or the disenfranchised blossoms of Japan and their dossiers, detailing their names, heights, weights, and aptitudes, whose company was available for purchase. Despite their circumstances, these women retained pristine etiquette and cultivated impressive educations. Or Moringa, skeptical of the white BBs, but ever charming and ever regal. Her position as queen was marked by a circle of white beads, brilliant against her ebony skin and short cropped hair. And she danced like no one Aloha had ever seen. Or Olga, who'd come to China after losing everything in the Red Revolution. Widow of a Czarist officer, she'd escaped from a concentration camp under dire circumstances. She did terrible things to survive. She was the only cannibal Aloha'd met in all of her travels. There was nothing savage about any of them.
What's the most amazing place you've ever been?
There is not a more difficult question, you know. I suppose it comes down to stories, and to me, the greatest story belongs to the Taj Mahal. Shah Jahan commissioned the monument after his favorite wife, a Persian princess, died, giving birth to their 14th child. I love the idea that love, that the loss of love, can inspire beauty like that. To see the Taj Mahal in the day, and to see the Taj Mahal at night. These were her only two goals upon her arrival in India. And tonight was the night. Guided by men wearing turbans and holding lanterns, she and Kat found themselves alone, entering the true tomb of the lovers, where they were presented with orange flowers, their palms were dusted with sandalwood powder, and they descended. Upon his sarcophagus, Jahan's, was a stone pen, upon hers, a tablet, for he was writing and would continue to write a story of grief, but mostly a story of love. Was she the Remington? And Cap the blank page? Was it the responsibility, the charge, of the one who's left behind to keep telling the stories? She thought of the Temple of Silence, where the bones of every class, men, women, children, beggars to kings, found their way to the same fate. She thought of the men in Africa, fighting the air, warding off evil spirits as they lay their tribesmen to rest. The smell of funeral pyres along the Ganges, or the way they buried that old sailor, the one she tried to nurse back to health. So much of faith is grief.
Are they any closer to solving it, Miss Wonderwell? Miss Baker? No. No, they're not. Next question.
Finding him that way? What an ending. He deserved better. Off the coast of California in the Pacific Ocean, on board their private yacht, some coward, some stranger, had come on board and shot Captain Walter Wonderwell, killed her cap. And they buried him the same way they buried the old sailor at sea.
And oh, the scandal, the salacious stare she had drawn on the witness stand.
And on her second wedding day, there was no escaping it.
How does Mr. Baker deal with the accusations? Next question. What about that man they had in custody? Alibi. Next question. Is it strange to continue our adventures without him?
Yes. Next question.
There was no escaping it. There's really no escaping anything. Sometimes she envied her friend, Percy Fawcett, who she'd searched for, who disappeared into the Amazon, seeking adventure, searching for myth, who disappeared into legend. Maybe that's the only escape. What she wouldn't give to be at the beginning of her own story again, setting out on the infinite roads that always, always lead home.
And our road, my trusted companion, leads here.
Come on. Now, I know it doesn't look like much. It's a little worse for wear. Rusted, bent, and broken. Just a shadow of its former self, to say the least.
But I remember it. I remember its glory days. It was a jewel. It glowed with colors too bright for the plains or for the forest. It was a camp of intrigue and magic and mystery. And you mark my words, this was the world's most fantastic, most amazing, most unbelievable carnival.
Ladies and gentlemen, and children everywhere,
Audio Dime Museum.
With more laughs, thrills, and chills.
Carnival.